This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead. And I am delighted to be back with you. I had a couple of interesting things happen to me this week. One day I decided I had enough time to take out some garbage, get to the dumpster, and get back in time to just plug in my phones and start the program. Well, that did not happen. You see, I miscalculated and forgot that I now have this new lock that slams shut, and I mean shut. If you're not there with your keys to open it, forget it. And I couldn't open the door. I couldn't get anybody to help me open the door. I had to wait until a locksmith could be found to help me get into my own house. So the moral of that story that I learned was, don't take out the garbage. Just let it mount inside. Just don't take out the garbage, especially just before a show. Just don't do that. And then I wasn't feeling too well, so I had to take a day off. That was yesterday. Didn't feel too good, and I'm fine now. So things are back on track. I now know not to take out the garbage, and I have to pay specific attention to how I'm feeling every day. I'm glad to be back with you, very much so. So let's have some talking done. Don't you think it's a good time to have some talking done today about the things that have been happening and affecting us all? And the first thing I want to make a note of is how ghastly this president has behaved with regard to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. As you know, she has died. She was an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And Donald Trump's conduct and behavior, especially as a president of the country, was just ghastly. A horrible, horrible display of contempt. But you know, the good thing is this: people got over it and said, we're not even paying attention to him, trying to make himself known by being obstreperous at a time when the country needed healing, and most importantly, when a president should take on the role of setting a tone. It's a time of mourning. And you don't do it by showing people how much you disliked her and how much you have no particular care one way or the other that she has died. You just want her seat on the court filled, and let's go on with life. The good thing, the excellent thing, is that she lived a life, both professionally and personally, in a way that people responded to what she was giving all these years. A genuine interest in her work, trying to excel at what she was doing, and not being out there and outlandish. This was not movie star time for her. She was very much engaged in trying to do the finest work of an associate justice. And it showed. It still is showing, because her clerks are showing up to act as an honorary guard as she lies in state. And it would have been such a gentlemanly thing to do. You don't even have to be a friend, but as a president, you should have taken the lead to show how a head of state behaves, especially in a time of mourning. So I'm not worrying about him. He is who he is. Whatever he uses for manners, that's what he's got. But I am so happy and pleased that the people have reacted the way they have reacted and continue to react as her body lies in state. And she's given the honor and the consideration that she is very much due. So I salute her and thank her for taking such care in her work as an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, and with a particular focus on championing the rights of the downtrodden, the people who have been left out, the people who have been oppressed historically in this country. And she served with great honor and great integrity, something that Trump can't begin to emulate. So I start the program with that today. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, thank you for what you have done and contributed to this country. Please know how valuable it has been to millions of people in this country. Well, let's talk about a bubbling story concerning the former mayor of the city of New York, Michael Bloomberg. He's a philanthropist, as you know, multi-billionaire, and he teamed up with a Florida-based charity called the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition on a specific project to help restore the voting rights of as many as 32,000 ex-felons who, because of their convictions, cannot vote until all money penalties associated with their crimes, all money penalties must be paid. Now, he says it's a civic-minded cause. It is a right cause. It is a just cause. That the matter of fees and money owed because of convictions as felons, it's not right that they shouldn't be able to vote. So he has spent or contributed as much as $20 million to this cause. Well, that's it on one level. Here's the other level. Does it seem to you that it is possible that he and the organization might be correctly accused of buying a block of votes, pushing for a Joe Biden win in a swing state? Is that possible? Would it be wrong to see it that way? Let's start with the calls at 888-874-4888. He says he's trying to do a good thing, and the organization is trying to do a good thing to restore the voting rights of people who have been convicted of crimes, but who are not completely off the hook because there are still outstanding debts that they have related to their convictions. They must pay, according to the law, they have to pay these fines and make restitution in order that they may once again enjoy their voting rights. Some critics are saying this is a backdoor way of buying block votes. And we're talking here about 32,000 votes. That's a lot of votes in Florida, which is going to be a major battle state. Do you agree with that, that that's questionable, even though he says it's for a good cause and he explained it, that people should not be prevented from voting because they haven't paid their money damages? And so by paying it, it allows them to participate once again in voting. The flip side, as I've said, is could it be seen as buying these votes? Because if you pay to restore their voting rights, you essentially are giving them a gift. And they may choose to express gratitude for this gift by voting for the candidate you encourage to be voted for. Ed from Jamaica, what do you think about that?
Hello, Utrecht. How are you?
Okay. I'm okay today. Thanks.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Personally, I don't have a problem with it. Technically, you're absolutely right. It is a form of voter buying, voter buying option. I mean, it's you're going to pay my fines. I'm going to feel gratitude. I'm going to vote for your candidate. And it's Bloomberg's way of sort of like locking down a swing state, which Florida is. It's always been a bone of contention in every election where there's been a problem from Bush 2 to the hanging chads and all of that. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. You know, that's my personal reason. But is it correct? I mean, in another time, no. In this time, anything goes, and I don't have a problem with it.
Why is it that at this time anything goes?
Yeah.
Why isn't the law the law?
Well, I mean, we're in a, my personal opinion, we're in a state of siege. We have a criminal enterprise in charge of the country. And even though I'm not a Biden Kamala fan, I'm not a Democratic fan, I'm just saying that we got to get rid of this criminal enterprise. If this enterprise continues for another four more years, there might not be another four more years. And I'm not, you know, being histrionic, I'm being factual. He has violated the law. He has caused more than 200,000 deaths in this country. And he lies and swears to it. And lies again. I mean, the man is bereft of character. His administration is bereft of morals. And, you know, when you're fighting, when you're fighting fire, you got to throw all the water at it you can. And if Bloomberg's money can do some good in that aspect, letting some ex-convict brothers vote and getting this guy out, I got no problem with it. I mean, you know.
So you say in this instance, you can overlook the law.
You better believe it.
Oh, Lord. Thank you so much for getting us started today. Jay from New York, how do you see this? Is this an attempt, a sincere attempt to help ex-felons pay their fines and get on with their lives and have their voting rights restored? Or is this a backdoor way of buying their votes?
Combination of both, I would say. I would say the realization is that if the people he's paying the fines for and fees for are going to vote for the Democratic Party, then he may be happy. If they vote for the Republican Party and what you have in office now, then I don't think it may be worth his investment. But, you know, whatever way that it goes, he's trying to help some people and promote what most people say is the thing to change in society. and making things better. Now, I feel he could use his money more in terms of trying to get people to vote in other states and in Florida to get this madman out of office, because what we are heading for in this country in regards to this president being reelected is something that men like him don't even want, if truth be,
yes, but
be told.
It's his money, and this is what he says he's trying to accomplish. He's trying to get to restore the voting rights of people whose right to vote is denied because they still have outstanding fees and fines to pay.
Well,
he put $20 million up and said, look, you know, your fines are paid. But the criticism is that could be interpreted as a way of buying votes. And that is strictly forbidden, very much illegal in the United States. You can't buy people's votes. But he's dancing on the edge here, saying, I'm not buying anybody's votes. I'm just paying their fines.
Well, that's why it's come see, come saw, because I know there's other people that have put together groups to donate money to do the same thing. So, I mean, you know, it's one of those things. I mean,
it's not one of those things. We want to know where you stand.
If you let me finish the point,
I will let you finish.
It's one of the things is, if it's an individual, they could say that. But if it's a collective group of people, then maybe they can't say that. Maybe you need to get two or three more people to join him to do it, because it seemed like they're not going after the LeBron James and the group that he put together to do the same thing. But here it is, they're going after one individual. So that may be the solution. But what he's doing, I believe, is right. Citizens United.
Thank you for your
right?
Thanks for your opinion today. Lincoln Brown from Mount Vernon, what are your thoughts about this?
Hi, Utrecht. How are you?
Okay, thanks. How are you doing?
Glad to hear that you're back in good stead.
Yes.
As soon as I heard it, I concluded he wants Trump to lose so badly that he was going to buy that block of vote. That was his first motive. It's completely to try to ensure Biden's win. And then, secondly, which is, vocally. But the next thing is, I also
think... We're having a very bad connection. You need to speak directly into your phone. We're losing you.
Okay, I'm going to try again. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I said, as soon as I heard it, the first thing that came to my mind was that he despises Trump so much, or wants Trump to lose so badly, that he was going to buy that block of vote. It is specifically to buy that block of vote and to enable Biden to succeed. Not because he's enamored of Biden, but because it is a blow against Trump. And then secondly, I think it's also to ingratiate himself with the Democratic voters for the future, just in case he decides to get back in the race again. And thirdly, it is to also neutralize his reputation with black people concerning his stop and frisk record. I think it's those three reasons, but primarily to buy the block of votes.
All right. You made some good points there.
Okay.
But I still wonder what it is you think, essentially. What is the principle of the thing to you? Is it okay? Are you all right with it?
No, it's wrong. And it shows that the people are venal, and he's setting up a precedent for the future. I remember, back when I was a boy in Jamaica, every time it was election time, there was one particular man who you would always offer Bustamante. You would always offer the people bread and saltfish, and the poor would go for that, you know. And as soon as the election is over, they continue to starve. So it is really training the people to be venal, to be easily bought. That's what this is.
All right. Thank you for your opinion today. Mitch from Brooklyn, what do you think about the scenario where a person contributes or helps to raise $20 million so that a block of votes could be released because the people who own those votes would be relieved of the obligation to pay their fines and whatever else is holding things up, and so they can be free to become voters once again? What do you think about this?
Well, when you think about it, like the people in Florida, they voted to give these people back their privilege. The people in Florida, they voted to give these felons back their privilege to vote. And it was the legislation, the Republican legislators in Florida, that put this law into place. They put this law into place. It wasn't there before. The Republican representatives down there, they went to court and they put this in place. So now they're changing the rules of the game. They said, no, you can't pay it. He's not saying you have to vote Democratic, is he? No, he's not. He's saying, I'm going to give these people the right to vote, and they can vote any way they want to put it. And then
you're skirting around the issue, I must say. If your benefactor happens to be a Democrat, or your benefactor happens to be a progressive or of whatever political stripe, doesn't that influence your thinking as a voter that in thanks to him for doing this great favor of having your voting rights restored, you vote that way?
No, it wasn't. No, because it wasn't there in the beginning. There was no law in the books that said somebody paid. Like if I sent my cousin money to get his voting rights back, there's nothing saying that because I'm in New York and I'm a Republican, that he should vote Democrat. No, I don't think it's that. It wasn't there in the beginning. This is something that this is a form of voter suppression that they've been playing all along. You know, do you think if he hadn't put the money up, and I have to send a couple of dollars down there to pay my cousin's fine, they would say, no, you can't do that? No, I don't think so. He's not saying you must vote for the Democrats. You can vote for anybody you want to.
I think it comes very close to the line of being questionable whether this could be done, because we're talking here about more than 30,000 people.
Yeah, well, why did they...
Suit.
Can I ask you a question? So why did the legislation go and say, look, we're going to put this in place? No, you can't give these felons the right to vote. Why did they do that? Why didn't they just leave it to what the people said? The people said, let these people vote.
Yes, but the people are not legislators.
Yeah, the
people
aren't legislators, but the people voted.
This is part of legislation that says, it's on the books, that you can't buy votes.
Nobody's buying any votes. It's the legislators are Republicans.
Diplomatically here. Of course, they're not buying votes.
Yeah.
But then look at the end result. Is it not tantamount to buying votes? Doesn't that come close to influencing in one fell swoop, 32,000 people to be restored their voting rights?
Right.
And
that's right. It wasn't there in the beginning.
There's a concern about it.
Yeah, but it wasn't there in the beginning. You can also say, well, by the Republicans who are in the majority down there on the legislature saying that by not allowing this to happen, so are you, is that voter suppression? Is that voter suppression? This is supposed to be a democracy. Everybody should be.
We're dancing around the subject.
Themselves.
The subject is, by law, which has been on the books, they cannot vote because they have these outstanding fines and so forth.
Right. So he
and
said he's going to pay.
All of a sudden, the idea is one person or one organization can put up the money and buy their relief.
Yeah.
Say your fees are paid and so forth. Now you can go ahead and vote. Does this not raise a question as to whether
because he's
this
not
arrangement
the only...
influences
yeah.
the votes of these ex-felons?
As I can recall, he's not the only organization that was doing this. There was another organization
out there. That's not the question we're discussing. We're not discussing
what?
Whether he's not the only one. We're discussing whether this formula raises appropriate questions about undue influence of a vote to the point of buying votes.
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't say that. It depends on how you look at it. To me, for them to say, well, no, you can't do this, it's a matter of voter suppression. So let him, he's not saying vote for me. He's saying you have the right to vote.
He's not saying vote for me. We know he's not saying vote for Democrats. But we can see somewhere in all of this, we can see how close it comes to influencing a vote. And in the minds of some people, unduly influencing a vote. Because you put up the money, that is influence. It would have been illegal if we were just straight out, I'll buy your vote, I'll pay your fines.
Well, what about the other organizations that's doing it? I mean, there's no argument against them, and they're doing it. They're raising money to pay back these fines so these people can vote. And I don't see anybody
making
any arguments.
You're giving me a kind of naive explanation. I have to accept it, but I marvel at the fact that you don't see the implications here that we should be concerned about people showing up with money and paying off these fines to people who are distressed, people who were imprisoned, people who still have an obligation to complete their obligation to the county or to the city where they live. And in the quick transaction, they're able to regain their rights. And people are not inclined to see the connection between somebody paying your fines and that person, by paying your fine, is influencing how you vote.
No, he's not saying vote for me or vote for the Democrats.
We
know
that. He's not saying vote for me. Not in those words, not in those terms. But if you had, let's put it, make it personal. If you were in such a situation, you have lots of fines to pay. Somebody comes to you and says, how much are your fines? I have $3,500 in fines. Don't worry about it. I'll pay it. That is all you need to know? You don't think that there is another thought that should be in your mind as to what is happening here? Is this person trying to influence me and
paid
how I vote?
So what? You know, it doesn't, he's not saying vote for Democrats or anything. He said you can vote. That's it. You could, the police call this place call itself a democratic society, and everybody should have the right to vote. But yet,
right.
Still, they put up all of these
obstacles.
But
everybody has
there
a right
no,
to be upfront
before,
and
there was
two. This is the question being raised. You say there's no connection, and others are saying we have to look at that because he might just be opening the door to a whole new turnaround in voting law that gives people the right to vote simply because their fines are paid, and this might be a new backdoor into buying votes. Nobody's saying there's a piece of paper that says vote Democrat, vote Republican, vote progressive, vote whatever. There's no such evidence. But is it possible that this is, in fact, at the root of this move? Thanks
well,
so much
you
for
got
your
it.
Opinion today. Thank you for contributing. Gary from Hempstead, what do you say?
Good afternoon, beloved. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Good afternoon.
And thank you. Wanted to weigh in on the discussion. First and foremost, I think what Mr. Bloomberg is doing, and I agree with some of the motives that were expressed by one of your earlier voters, the possibility that he's trying to influence things and trying to position himself for the future. But first and foremost, he is righting a wrong. Just as one could suggest that his paying off these debts is influencing people possibly to vote for Democrats, one could also make a very strong argument that the legislature purposely put in place this law to suppress the ability to wanted to vote against Donald Trump.
Okay, but that's not our discussion. Our discussion is, does this come within the realm, does it come close to the argument being made, does it come close to concern by members of the public, certain members of the public, or the legislature, or investigative authorities, that this action is not as benign as it seems, but it is a kind of ingenious way to buy votes?
Well, certainly. Someone could make that argument, just as someone could argue that the legislation that was passed was a way of implementing a poll tax, which
but
is
you
against
make it,
the
law. I'm having difficulty. That argument is not part of what we're discussing today. Whether when this law was passed, whether it was constitutional or not. The question at hand, what we're discussing now, is the concern that individuals with money or organizations with money can enter the fray by saying, we are trying to affirm the voting rights of individuals who we believe are wrongly denied their right to vote. And if it's all a matter of paying fines, we'll pay the fines and restore their rights ourselves.
I think
does
the simple
that
answer
open
to
the
your
door
question.
To
I think
a
the
question
to your...
about whether people in doing this transaction this way are actually buying votes?
I think the simple answer to your question is yes, but I think to discuss this question without context is a bit of a disservice.
It's a straight
because we've
thing.
We've always had people with money influencing
right.
elections. I mean, that's been going on forever. And the, I forget the name of the, where corporations could, be people and give all this money and dark money. I mean, it's all the same kinds of conversations. So all within
okay,
the
so let me ask
realm.
You a different way. Is this dark money?
No, because he's right up front. He's telling you who he is and, you know, what he's providing. And as the earlier voters, I mean, callers have said, he is not tying his largesse to an obligation that the voter has to vote
for. Because he understands how dumb a move that would be.
Okay.
You don't say publicly, I'm going to give a bunch of money out, and when you get it, here's the way you should vote.
Right.
No, he's not going to say that. We're far more sophisticated than that.
Right.
But the question still remains about the intention and whether it comes close to violating the law by buying votes, by improperly influencing people to vote a particular way.
An argument could be made that this is influence peddling. I mean, that's the simple answer.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air. What have you to say about this question?
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Now, this is nothing more than a 2020 poll tax. And so the legislature didn't make provisions for how the poll tax was supposed to be paid. All it said was that it had to be paid. Now, I, as an individual or any individual, can present themselves and say, I'm paying the poll tax. And I don't have a problem with Michael Bloomberg. I understand the issue that you're talking about, influence. I would consider Michael Bloomberg a lobbyist. And as we know, lobbyists are paid to influence how an individual responds, whether it's a legislature, a legislator, a senator, even the president of the United States. So as far as I'm concerned, Donald Trump, as you know, is a malignant narcissist. He's a psychopath. And I personally will be willing to take the risk, the long-term risk. The immediate benefit is that, yeah, maybe he will influence their vote. And hopefully he does influence their vote in the way that I want. Long term, it might not work out. But in the short term, in the immediate term, I don't have a problem with it.
Okay. Well, you see, what is at the crux of this question really has to do with how we feel about the independent right to exercise the franchise. When we have, the question is, when someone intercedes in that process, because the assumption is one voter, one vote. But if you have somebody influencing or possibly influencing the vote by paying your delinquent fees, outstanding obligations because of your conviction on a crime, it muddles things. It's no longer cut and dry, because now you have an agent who has interposed himself in the process. The assumption always has been, well, you incurred these costs because of the crimes that you committed, and by law, this is how we run the show, by law you pay your fine, and you don't get out of an obligation to pay that fine and return to, you know, normal life. You still are obligated to pay your fines. Simply because somebody interposes him or herself and says, well, I'll pay the fine for Mary over here, and I'll pay the fine for Dennis over there. That introduces a whole different dynamic. Is that person actually paying the fine himself or herself to cover the obligation that person incurred by committing a crime and going to court and having to serve time? Or is the responsibility taken off of the individual and so should be allowed because the individual cannot raise the money because of circumstances in his or her life? Somebody comes in and says, look, I'll pay the cost so that you could be free to have your rights restored, your voting rights restored. This is an election year. Every vote counts. It's a very dicey situation. It is not cut and dried. Because other people would say, well, wait a minute. You mean the difference between my candidate winning and losing is whether a rich person can come along and subsidize the expenses of a voter who correctly is obligated to pay those fines according to the law because they broke the law. They have to pay court fines and they have to pay fees and whatnot. And according to the way the law works, you have to pay those fines in order to have your rights restored. You are not paying, therefore, it's not a matter of anybody could pay to have your rights restored, or is it a matter that you, the person who committed a crime, should pay to have your rights restored yourself? It's a complicated question. It seems simple, but it isn't. And it raises, again, that question of having people present themselves as philanthropists or people who want to do the right thing and be charitable and so forth. But really what they're doing is building a constituency by buying it. Chances are, if you pay somebody's fine, they will remember that. And they will express a return of loyalty in their own way. So this is a question that raises a whole new set of questions. What is allowable? Who actually bears the burden of paying these fines? And make it clear, should the person, him or herself, be responsible for that? Or should you accept, quote, donations toward discharging your debt, which you incurred because you committed a crime? Are you entitled to that? We don't know. These are questions that this society will have to ask and engage in. I wanted to touch on this very, very famous case now. Actually, it's become a nefarious case. And that is the case of Breonna Taylor, where no officer, but let me just back up a bit. As you remember, or you recall, or you may know, Breonna Taylor was one of two people whose night rest, I guess, was interrupted by a no-knock execution of a warrant. And the warrant was to search the premises for drugs, for proceeds from drugs, and other things that were prohibited by law. And in the melee that ensued, she was shot and killed. Three officers had engaged in this action, and we don't see that any of them so far has been charged with a crime. They may have been, crimes may have been considered against them, but none of them certainly has gone to jail. None of them officially has been charged with a serious crime, with this break-in into somebody's home and the shooting and her death. So I'm asking the question, what should be done? By the way, as you know, there was a very fast resolution hoping to put the fires out. The public went mad about this. The city of in Kentucky decided that they would speed things up and pay off the family and not prolong it any further, but they would pay the family in a compensation for the death of Breonna Taylor. $12 million. It's the highest amount paid so far on record for the city. And it is meant, of course, to cut short or cut off any further public uproar over how this whole thing happened and was handled. The question here is, what should happen right now in this case? What do you think should happen in this case? Should there be a major inquiry that starts from scratch to get all the pieces of this case accounted for? Should it require a microscopic examination of the actions of police? Does it raise a question of these no-knock procedures that they undertake from time to time to catch unawares people that they've been looking for or have in mind to arrest? What do you think ought to happen here with this case? And what do you consider the most significant failings in this case so far? 888-874-4888. I should warn you ahead of time, we're not going to get to the full discussion today, so be prepared. We will have to come back to it tomorrow. But I didn't want to end the program without at least tackling some dimension, some portion of it, and this is what we'll do today. This case calls for special examination on many fronts. But most importantly, let's look at the most blatant issues raised by the case that still must be tended to and must be responded to by the government, by the police, by the various entities that had a supervisory role in this case. All right, so there we go. 888-874-4888. Again, I warn you that we will not get through this discussion today. We will continue it tomorrow, but I could not let the program end without us tackling some portion of the question today. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family. Can I have some brief response to the previous question or
Well, we're moving on because
okay,
I want to
well,
keep everybody together.
Okay. Well, when can I respond to that? Do I wait until, well, today is Thursday. I guess I can try to do that tomorrow. It's important.
Right.
As to Breonna Taylor, I think this is a situation where it's the same old, same old. It's so locked in stone that until we reimagine completely the police, this will continue to happen. And this is why I was doing something else, but I heard a sister a week or so ago that was taking you on, Utrice, because the idea that she's the suspect the deaths. I mean, they always bring out everything since you've been a nine-term baby. And so I think that was some pushback because it was, I mean, in the overall context, you have with they had the Walker, the boyfriend in the house at the time. They were trying to basically extort him into making her a suspect on some level. And as the information comes out, it gets more bizarre because they say there were no drugs in the house. So that means that Brianna was on the floor without treatment for 20 minutes. And it was still all about they're trying to see if there were drugs. So it's a situation that until we look at the structural. And by the way, this Mattingly guy, he actually had the temerity.
Are you recounting the case? We'll do that another time. What I want to know is what for you is significant about what has happened so far that needs to be looked into?
Good question. I think that the FBI, and they're not used to this role, and that's part of the problem, but they've opened up a civil rights investigation that was denigrated by this officer, Mattingly, and, you know, talked about being warriors in the community. So it's the same old, same old. And they need to open up a civil rights case and get outside of that pattern where there's never any time a civil rights case because our lives simply don't matter. And actually, our lives, our deaths, our maiming might be equated with progress in this country. You know,
right. Thank you for getting us started. You've certainly invited to return tomorrow, but you gave us a taste of where your head is at on this question. Is Patricia still with us?
Hello?
Yes, Patricia, you're on the air. What is, to you, the most significant aspect of this case so far?
Well, the first thing was that when the family accepted the compensation last week, they should have understood that that was the end of it. The strategy of the attorneys who have represented all of these families, all they have ever done was go for the money, but they have never gone for justice. And as you know, Malcolm said, justice before compensation. The minute the city of Lexington, Kentucky gave the family the $12 million, they were done. The officers were never going to be held accountable. Kwame Ture said nonviolence only works if your opponent has a conscience. And in the United States, there no one has a conscience. So at this particular point, there's very little that they can do in terms of the justice that they want. What they can certainly do is file a civil rights violation. But again, the system says they've already been compensated. What more do we need to do? If they want more blood, it's not going to happen. So this really bounces back on the community. The only two things I keep saying that this country values is, number one, our vote, because it allows them to do and go wherever they want to go, and our money. I mean, do you realize we are the consumers? I'll just give you one quick example. Black Americans consume 80% of the bourbon that's drunk in this country. Do you realize that if we just withdrew the bourbon money, the system would recognize that something is afoot? If black women stop buying all that fake hair, if they stop going to the nail salons and stop getting pedicures, just those three items alone would get everybody's attention. But the people that the community have dedicated themselves to following will not mess with folks' money. And until you begin to mess with their money, you will constantly be begging for your humanity.
Two opinions that should get us started tomorrow on in-depth conversations about this case. Tomorrow's Free Your Mind Friday, and that's the thrust of what we're going to do tomorrow. We'll take into account what Ma'at has contributed and what Patricia is now saying, because they make very, very important points that need to be fleshed out some more. So thank you so much for contributing today and spending some time with me and each other. And we will return tomorrow to Free Your Mind Friday. And as I've said, we've laid out what we are going to be talking about in great detail tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening and joining me today. Bye-bye.